Welcome to Between the Lines, where we explore the rich tapestry of the Bible's teachings and revelations with your hosts, David and Jonathan. Thanks for joining us on WVFF 97.7 FM as we seek to understand the deeper meanings behind the verses and discover the love of Christ and hope of His salvation. Without further ado, our hosts, David and Jonathan.
All right, here with David and Jonathan on Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible, an amazing living manuscript that will give you something every time you open it. But you have to look at every word, you have to consider every phrase. You can't just read it like you read a book of fiction, because it is not. On WVFF 97.7, glad you could join us. What installment is this, Jonathan?
Number seven.
An exhaustive view of the book of Genesis. Things you've never heard before, things you have heard before. Put them together, get the bigger picture. We're in chapter 33, verse 18. Jacob just made his exodus from his father-in-law, Laban. And Laban caught up with him, and God warned Laban, don't you say anything good or bad. He came close to the line of saying bad things.
Sure did. He straddled it.
And let it go, and then they made a pact between them. And then the thing that Jacob really feared was running in and passing the land of his brother Esau. He says, this thing I fear. And God put Esau straight too. And if you catch the last installment, you'll see how that all worked out. But Jacob's home free now, and he's heading into his land. Verse 18, chapter 33, and Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan-Aram, and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it Elohim, Israel. Okay, and that's the last two verses that we read off in the last chapter. So we're going to start with chapter 34, verse 1. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. She goes out to meet the girls in the neighborhood. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. There was no courtship there. There was nothing of any credibility there.
No kind of arrangement between families. He just went and laid with her.
Took her and had his way with her. And you did not do that with the princess of the Hebrews. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. So, to his credit, he did fall in love with her, but he did it all wrong and absolutely wrong. And he loved the damsel, and spake kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field. Jacob held his peace until they had come in that evening. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, very upset at what had been done to their sister, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her him to wife, and make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. Ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. And Shechem said unto her father, And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, let me find grace in your eyes, and what shall say unto me I will give. So please let my son have your daughter and live here amongst us. You take our daughters for your wives. We'll take your daughters for our wives, for our sons. And whatever payment you want, for me to give you so my son can have Dinah, you ask and I'll do it.
And this is all a reversed order, because
yes.
If it would have went the other way, where they just approached and did all this and set it up in the beginning, then there would have been no kind of folly.
Absolutely, because the sons were forbidden to have marriages with the daughters of the outsiders, but the daughters weren't. The line did not continue in the daughter. So it quite possibly would have been arranged and done. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully, and said, because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said unto them, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. So you have to fall into the covenant that our God had given to Abraham. And we remember what the covenant was at that time. It was, bring your heart toward me and circumcise your firstborns at day number 8. Nothing more. Right. That's all God had asked in the first covenant at this point. But in this will we consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters unto us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. And that was entirely possible, because God had said, anyone that joins your household, circumcise them, and they are adopted in. So, but what did it say 3 verses up? It said they answered deceitfully. They're lying.
Right.
Answered deceitfully because they are mad. Their sister has been defiled, and they are angry. But if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and will be gone. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter. He says, absolutely, we will all become circumcised as you ask. And he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city and communed with the men of their city, saying, these men are peaceable with us. Now this is a lot of men. Jacob's household is enormous now. He has lots of servants. His 11 sons. Lots of cattle. I mean, this is a good sized band of people. These men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For the land, behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us, or to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised. And I can see these guys' faces as he says it.
Ew!
Yes. Don't they normally do that when you're a child and you don't have to remember it?
Right.
As they are circumcised. So, clip, clip, and we're in. It's that easy, right, fellas. Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Question. Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. And I can imagine, because of what this Bible says about the beauty of the Hebrew females, I can imagine that they got in line, fell in line immediately, because the pure Hebrew woman is absolutely gorgeous from what this Bible has said so far. Inasmuch as men will lie that they're not their wives, because obviously other men will kill them to have them.
That's right.
We've seen that how many times now? Twice?
Twice.
Yeah.
Grandfather and grandson.
And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males.
That's now, two people.
Yes, now, yes, that's what you say. How in the world? I mean, yeah, sure, I'll be sore, but how do two men slay possibly hundreds in that city? And they slew Hamer and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. Okay, you got to go to the book of Jasher to find out how these two men and two swords went and slew every man in the city. Because the book of Jasher tells you things that the book of Genesis here does not. The Hebrew was a very, the pure Hebrew under God was a very powerful creature. I mean, go there and read it, the book of Jasher. It's absolutely amazing. It was in your Bible at one time. Men decided that you didn't need to read it. I do truly believe that the exploits of the Hebrews in the book of Jasher are pretty much true, and it is really good reading. But these two Hebrews wiped out these guys, this entire city of men, by themselves. And don't tell me circumcision keeps you from standing up and swinging a sword.
Yeah.
Because it does not. Yeah. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field. As if they needed more animals, they're quite wealthy already. And all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land." Jacob's worried because there are other cities around, and these people were friendly people, and they were friends with these other cities. He says, you guys, we sat there in the field, you told him, you asked him to circumcise your men, and we would give Dinah to him. And you guys were lying. Sitting right there with me, you guys were lying, and you went and done this. You have really messed things up for me. I don't know what's going to happen now. Yeah. So he says, "You have made me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number," when you consider multiple cities, yes, they are few in number, "they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, and I and my house." Now he's totally forgot about all of the promises of God here.
Yeah,
he's angry. His son's lied. His son's done this thing. He probably liked those people. I mean, he pitched his tent there and was going to stay.
Right.
And now he's forgotten all the promises of God. Oh, they're going to come and wipe us out.
Right. Now he's got the fear of man.
Fear of man in him. You're right, Jonathan. And they said, "Should he deal with our sister as with and harlot?" So, chapter 35, book of Genesis, David and Jonathan, between the lines, understanding the Bible. "And God said unto Jacob, Arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there. And God said to Jacob, Arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother." You remember when he camped out on the mount, on the
oh, yeah,
will be temple mount. He says, "Go back, make another altar."
I do remember, because that's another another little story that should expand a little bit on the size of the people that we're talking about, because it literally says he took a stone and used a stone as a pillow. It's just a little stone.
"And Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments." Now he's just added to his household, because they took the sons and daughters and the women from the men they had just killed. So he's saying, all right, basically cleanse yourself here. Put away these strange gods. We got two rules here. Your heart is toward the Almighty Living God, of Abraham, and your children will be circumcised. And let us arise and go to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. They gave unto Jacob all the strange gods which were in their hands, and all their earrings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was in Shechem. But he didn't keep them. He separated them from himself. And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them. And they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. And if you read the book of Jasher, I'm sure that has something to do with the terror of God that were in these other cities, because they heard what these two men did. These two sons of Jacob did. So Jacob came to Luz, which was in the land of Canaan, that is in Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. But Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak. And the name of it was called Alon Bachuth. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padan-Aram and blessed him. God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. Second time God has appeared and said this to him. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply a nation, and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. Now, look at the wording there. Okay, nation and a company of nations. I'm going to make you a vast empire, right? No, a nation and a company of nations. This is prophecy foretold into modern times, because there are many nations that come out of the Judeo-Christian community of Israel, early Israel. So yes, I will make you a nation. Up until this point, he said, I will make you a nation. Now, I will make you a nation and a company of nations. And you can account the United States in that. You can count Great Britain in that. Many, many nations within Europe, you can account for that. You have to get a map out and pick all of them based on the Jewish religion. Shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, even a pillar of stone. And he poured a drink offering thereon, and he poured oil thereon. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spake with him Bethel. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrath, and Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, Fear not, thou shalt have this son also. It came to pass, as her soul was in departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. And Rachel died, and was buried in the way of Ephrath, which is in Bethlehem. Now, you say, okay, Rachel died, and he buried her. But you see, he made no effort to take Rachel to his family's burying plot that Abraham had purchased. And it has a lot to do with Rachel's character, and the person that Rachel was, and the grief that Jacob had the whole time that he had Rachel, even though he loved her dearly. She was that wife that you love and you love to hate. And Jacob set a pillar upon her grave, that is a pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. You remember all the grief between Leah and Rachel? Now, Leah wished that Jacob loved her, but he always loved Rachel, and she was always trying to get his attention and his affection. But if you look at the children that Leah produced to Jacob, they will go so much farther and do so many more things in God's great scheme of things than the daughters. And it came to pass when Israel dwelt in that land. Now we have another transition, you know, Abram to Abraham. Now he's going to be Israel. You know, Jacob to Israel.
That's right.
And Reuben went and lay with Bilhah. Remember who Bilhah is? His father's concubine. That's a no-no, Reuben.
That's an expressed
no-no. And was not Reuben his firstborn? Yes. Now the sons of Jacob were 12. The sons of Leah, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and Simeon and Levi, and Judah, and Issachar and Zebulun, sons of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin, and the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali. And the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob, which were born to him in Padan-Aram. And Jacob came unto Isaac, his father, unto Mamre, unto the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. The days of Isaac were 180 years. And Isaac gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. They came together and buried him. Chapter 36. Yeah, remember that Reuben had went in and laid with his father's concubine, Bilhah, because that will affect Reuben at the time of his blessing.
Right.
And these are the generations of Esau, who is in Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan against his father's will and in spite, because his brother, according to other manuscripts, went to Laban and actually got the daughters that would have been the firstborn Esau's wives. Adar and the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibama, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zibion the Hivite, and Bashemeth, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebajoth. And Adar bare to Esau Eliphaz, and Bashemeth bare Reuel. And Aholibama bare Jusha and Jalem and Korah. These are the sons of Esau which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. And Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all his substance which he had got in the land of Canaan, and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. And you remember the little bit of a blessing that his father gave him. He said, you will serve your brother, but at one point you will break the yoke of your brother's servitude and be your own person. For their riches were more than that might dwell together and land therein. They were strangers, could not bear them because of their cattle. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Now, as you go through this rest of this Old Testament, remember Mount Seir and Edom, and associate that with Esau, because Esau's end will be not good. There's going to be a certain point where Esau refuses to assist his brother's people. Esau's people refuse to assist his brother's people. And God will put a sentence on him that every man of Esau's line will be killed. It's in at least three of the minor prophets. And it came to pass, and Esau's line will eventually be destroyed. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Adah, the wife of Esau; Reuel, the son of Bashemeth, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Teman, Omar, Zepho, and Gadam, and Kenaz. And Timnah was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son. She bare to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the sons of Adah, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Reuel, Nahath, Zerah, Shemaah, and Mizah. These were the sons of Bashemeth, Esau's wife. These were the sons of Aholibama. That one there is a tongue twister. Aholibama, the daughter of Anan, the daughter of Zibeon, Esau's wife, and she bare to Esau Jeush and Jalam and Korah. These were dukes of the sons of Esau. Interesting word there. Mm-hmm. Because they had been called princes up until this time, and all of the Jacob's sons are called princes, and the Bible chooses to distinguish between the two at this point and calls the sons of Esau duke for some reason, and I have never in all of my studies figured out the relevance, but I'm sure there's something there that will come to me one of these days. These were the dukes of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau, Duke Teman, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, Duke Kenaz, Duke Korah, Duke Gadam, and Duke Amalek. These are the dukes that came of Eliphaz and the land of Edom, which were the sons of Ada. These are the sons of Reuel, Esau's son, Duke Nahath, Duke Zerah, Duke Shema, Duke Mizah. These are the dukes that came of Reuel in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Bashemath, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife, Duke Jeush, Duke Jalam, Duke Korah. These were the dukes that came of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Esau, who in Edom, and these are their dukes. These are the sons of Seir, the Horite, who inhabited the land, Lotan and Shobal, Zibeon and Anna, and Dishon and Ezer and Dishan. These are the dukes of the Horites, the children of Seir in the land of Edom. And the children of Lotan were Horai and Hem, and Lotan's sister was Timnah. And the children of Shobal were these, Alban and Manahath and Ebal and Shepho and Onam. And these are the children of Zibeon, both Aja and Anna. This was that Anna that found the mules in the wilderness as he fed the asses of Zibeon his father. And the children of Anna were these, Dishon and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna. And these are the children of Dishon, Hemdan and Eshban and Ithran and Chiran. The children of Ezer are these, Bilhan and Zavan and Achan. The children of Dishan are these, Uz and Aran. These are the dukes that came of the Horites, Duke Lotan, Duke Shobal, Duke Zibeon, Duke Anna, Duke Dishan, Duke Ezer, Duke Dishan. These are the dukes that came of Horai among their dukes in the land of Seir. And this is the type of reading that will frustrate you, but it's very important because you will see a name here that you'll see later, and it will need to be associated with where they came from. A lot of people just skip through this, and I have done it in my multiple times reading through this Bible. I have skipped these portions because they tend to, well, from one thing, the English tongue does not like these names.
Yes, yes, very
it's,
true.
It's terrifying.
You're doing a fantastic job, though.
But suffer through it. I'm saying every time you read the Bible through, you don't have to go through these lineages, but at least go through them a few times. And these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before they reigned any king over the children of Israel. And Bela the son of Beor reigned in Edom, and the name of the city was Dinhabah. And Bela died, and Jobah, the son of Zerah of Bozra, reigned in his stead. Jobab died, and Husham of the land of Temanah reigned in his stead. And Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, was smote. Midian in the field of Moab resigned in his stead, and the name of his city was Avith. And Hadad died, and Shema and Masrika reigned in his stead. And Shamla died, and Saul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. And Saul died, and Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his stead. And Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, died, and Hadar reigned in his stead. And the name of the city was Peu, and his wife's name was Mehatabel, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mizhab. And these are the names of the dukes that came of Esau, according to all their families after their places by their names, Duke Timnah, Duke Alva, Duke Jeheth, Duke Aholabama, Duke Elah, Duke Pinon, Duke Kenaz, Duke Teman, Duke Mibzar, Duke Magdiel, Duke Aram. These are the dukes of Edom, according to their inhabitations of the land of their possessions. He is Esau, the father of the Edomites. So, oh, stressful.
Yes.
I'm going to drink a coffee here. All right, back to Jacob. I know in the chronology, one page over, it said he died and they buried him, his two sons, Jacob and Esau. But he's not done yet. We're back to him being alive. That was just an overview of his family and then an overview of his brothers. Mm-hmm. So, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Dad, they ain't minding them flocks very good. I mean, I seen a whole bunch of sheep scattered, and they're over there. There's one of them was fishing. You know, so he's tattletale, basically. Uh-huh. Runs to his dad, says, hey, they're not doing a good job. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him even more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright, and beheld your sheaves stood around about, and made obeisance to my sheaves. He basically says, I'm going to be king over you guys one day, according to this dream. And the brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? You're the youngest, you little punk. And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, told it his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. He said, oh, great.
You like the last one? Let me tell you this one.
Yeah, exactly. Behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. Okay, who is the sun and the moon? That's father and mother. Now father and mother and all 11 of you are bowing down before me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? That little coat of many colors has gone to your head.
It's just straight to your head. You were my favorite.
Yeah.
You're pushing it, buddy.
And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. So, in front of the children, in front of the other kids, not children, they're in their 20s now, except for Joseph. He said, how dare you dream a dream like that? But he pondered it in his heart, because he knows of such things could possibly come true. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. Oh, goody, I get to go spy on them again. Mm-hmm. Tell dad what they're not doing right.
That's right.
And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. When they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. That coat of many colors was very conspicuous.
Yes.
You know, anybody dressed in the regular garb, they didn't get real close.
Right. Joseph showing up with the binoculars.
Yeah. And they said, they see him come for miles. Red, yellow, blue. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's coming again. Look busy. You know what? We're going to kill him. Let's off him. Be done with it. He's nothing but a problem. Always telling Dad what we're doing. He's having these stupid dreams where we're supposed to bow down to that little thing. No way. And he said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands. Okay, a little redemption for Reuben. Okay, Reuben has done something terrible. He slept with his father's wife, his concubine. But this redemption here will help Reuben later. Let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father. Okay, Reuben is like a double-minded man. When we get to the blessing that Jacob says he basically says, you're so smart and honorable, but you are in other ways as unstable as water.
Stay tuned as we continue our journey through the scriptures on Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible. We'll be right back with more insightful discussions and exploration. Welcome back to Between the Lines. David and Jonathan are ready to continue sharing wisdom and passion for the Bible's hidden meanings. Let's dive back in.
And I've met people like this. I've been a person like this in times where even Paul says, the things I love, I don't do, and the things I hate, I end up doing. But Reuben was a conflicted person. Yes, very true to the mark, but
right.
When something of passion was inside of him, he didn't care.
Well, like, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to stop you there, but yeah, like, no, let's not kill him.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just chuck him in a pit.
He caused his life to be spared. And it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. So this caravan is coming along. They just thrown him in the pit. They sit down and have lunch and figure out what we're going to do with him. And this caravan comes along. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. So this has often baffled my mind. You could just lay hold of someone back then and sell them.
Yeah.
Like you and I are out fishing.
Right.
And
caravan comes by.
And I need a little cash that day. I grab you by the back of the neck. Hey, I'll take 50 bucks for this one.
50 bucks. Yeah.
And they were passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph unto Egypt. And you see that from the time of Joseph to the time of Christ, the price for a slave went up a little bit.
Yeah.
And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. He returned unto his brethren and said, the child is not, and whither shall I go? He's firstborn. He's responsible. And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of the many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Now know whether it be thy son's coat or not." They knew it was, but they're just playing so innocent. "Oh, father, look what we found in the field.
It's the most terrible thing.
Could this possibly be Joseph's coat?"
We know that he was a tattletale, but I mean...
it's got blood all over it. "And he knew it and said, 'It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him.' So they allowed Jacob to say what had happened." They didn't come and say an evil beast. They said, "Here's a coat we found. It's full of blood." And Jacob observes the coat and just comes to the realization that something has eaten his son. And Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I will go down unto my grave, unto my son, mourning." Thus his father wept for him. So these other 11 had no regard for their father. They didn't care about his feelings. All they wanted to do was rid themselves of Joseph. And their father says, "To the day I die, I will be sorrowful for this." And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. All right, we're in Genesis chapter 38 with David and Jonathan. And we are the Bible show is Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible. There is so much to be gotten out of this book when you read between the lines and you observe every word and you consider every phrase. You got to read it slow, you got to read it methodically, and read it out loud so that your ears can hear it. And the more you read it, the more God will show you what's in here.
Yes.
On WBFF 97.7 FM, glad you can join us. Chapter 38, Book of Genesis, verse 1. "It came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned in to a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of the certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he took her and went in unto her. And she conceived and bare a son, and he called his name Er. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. She went yet again, conceived, and bare a son, and called his name Shelah. And he was a Chezib when she bare him. And Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Er, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord slew him." It's because of the band of women that you chose your wife from, Judah.
And the Lord himself slew him.
Yes. "And Judah said unto Onan, 'Go in unto my brother's wife, go into thy brother's wife, and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother.'" That was the course of action.
Right.
When a brother died and had no offspring, it was the next brother's duty, not option, duty, to produce a child with his dead brother's wife, so that they could name the child after his brother and continue the seed. "And Onan knew that the seed should not be his, and it came to pass, when he went in unto her, his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother." So Onan didn't want to do this. I don't know what his reasons, some jealousy or something, but he did not want to have a child. And, you know, it's all in God's plan, and I'm sure God put it in his head not to have a child with her, because this story has to go the way it has to go.
Right.
On another note, this is, you know, a little bit of a touchy subject here, but this verse here has been preached on from the pulpit so many times, that he spilled his seeds on the ground, was that he should not give seed to his brother. And I have heard preacher after preacher say, this is the verse where it tells you that you should not masturbate. Okay, I said it on the radio. There's nothing like that here, okay? It was Onan's duty to put the seeds in his brother's wife. He chose not to create a child. It's nothing to do with anything other than that here. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. Okay, so he says, all right, I got another son, but he's very young. You're not that old. So, you know, give us another 10, 12 years until he gets of age, and we will fulfill the obligation to you, and my next son will produce a child with you. And in process of time, the daughter of Shuah, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted and went up unto his sheep shearers in Timnah. And he and his friend Hirah, an Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnah to shear his sheep. Okay, left out one little thing there. Judah also, in his mind, thought to himself, wow, this woman is bad luck. Mm-hmm. The two other sons, who were supposed to produce a child with her, have died. What if she's cursed, and what if causes this next son to die? What he says in verse 11. Go back to verse 11. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So he tells her just to be patient. But at the same time, he says, oh, wow, this one might die also. And in the process of time, the daughter of Shuah, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted and went up unto his sheep shearers in Timnah, he and his friend Hirah, the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, now she's caught on to this now, he's not going to give me the other son. So it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnah to shear his sheep. And she put her widow's garments off from her, covered her with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which is by the way of Timnath, where she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. So she's figured it out. She dresses as a harlot, because she finds out Judah's going to be going down this highway on his way up to the sheep shearing.
Gotta look flashy.
And she knows Judah's character.
Right.
He goes places, he sees a woman he wants, he pays for it. So when Judah saw her, he thought her to be an harlot, because she had covered her face, and he turned unto her by the way and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come into thee. I've been walking for a long time, I've got a lot of pent-up energy. Let me have relations with you. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what wilt thou give me, that thou mayest come in unto me? What will you give me in exchange for the sex that you want? Yep. And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. Now, she's going on credit.
Yeah.
I think that's very, very tricky and sketchy for a prostitute to do. Right. I don't know personally, but I don't think they don't go on. Do they go on credit, Jonathan?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know, but I mean, the price is like a baby goat.
Is that a lot?
I don't know. Like, the price conversion
And she said, "Wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it?" Okay, I need. Yeah, all right.
I'll take the goat.
One goat. Yeah. That'll work for the price. But how do I know for certain you're gonna pay me? Because I mean, we're gonna be done here in 10, 15 minutes, and you're gonna be on your way, and I'm gonna be sitting here with nothing. How do I know? And he said, "What pledge shall I give thee?" And she said, "Thy signet, and thy bracelets, and thy staff that is in thine hand." And he gave it to her. And those just, were family heirlooms, came from his father.
You think about the beguiling that she had on him, all right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
For him to be able to, here you go.
And he couldn't even see her face. She had a veil over it. Yeah. She must have smelled awful pretty, though. Yeah. So he takes off his signet ring, the family ring. Emblem of his royalty, and his bracelets, and his staff. And he puts them in her hand, and he gave it to her, and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. Oh, Judah, now remember this Tamar. That's a very important name. And she arose and went away, and laid by her veil from her, and put on the garments of her widowhood once again. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friends, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand. But he found her not. And he says, oh, no.
Yeah, that's exactly
what Oh, that. No. Dad's ring. I gave it to a prostitute.
Yep.
How am I going to explain that? I'll tell him it just fell off my finger. Oh, but he knows it's hard to get off. Oh, my gosh. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place."
Don't know what you're talking about, bud.
We're here every day. We never see a harlot here. Because she knew when he was coming. She watched him. She sat out there moments before he got there.
Uh-huh.
And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Oh, no. And also the men of the place said that there is no harlot in this place. Judas said, "I know I didn't dream that." My staff, my bracelet, my ring.
Was this like bait donkey? Bait car?
Absolutely. And Judas said, "Let her take it to her." Judas said, "Let her take it to her. Lest we be shamed, behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her." Came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, "Hey, your daughter-in-law, you know the one, your dead son? Sir, she's pregnant." "Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot, and she's still wearing a widow's garment." So, until the father says, "Your mourning time is over," the garment doesn't come off. And at that time, she could get another husband if she wanted. "And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom," because she is not married. Interestingly enough, she has been called a whore.
Right.
Judah is still sitting at the head of his table.
Yes.
Not a big problem other than his ring's missing, given to a whore, prostitute, right?
Right.
And I don't say this word...
No.
You know, but it's right here, whoredom. It's in the Bible.
Yeah, you're not being malicious, and you're not trying to be.
Yeah, that reminds me of when I was young. I picked up the word piss.
Right.
And my mother was chastising me for it, and I took the Bible in there one day and turned to Isaiah. Isaiah had a bit of a potty mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Isaiah says piss all the time, so it's really not a bad word.
Yes, sir. It's those who pisses against the wall.
Yeah. I'm talking about washing his face with piss. I mean, it's just... Yeah. And Judah said, "Bring her forth and let her be burned." He just put a death sentence on this woman because she's not married and she obviously slept with a man. He obviously takes prostitutes all the time because it was no hesitation whatsoever. And she knew that he would do it Because she's watched him do it over the years. Probably talk about it. Probably his sons probably joke about, oh, Dad. Should have seen that one Dad was with last week.
Yeah.
You know.
Came back with our cloak.
Yeah,
to exactly. Take the coat out to her.
All right. So he says, bring her here. I'm going to have her burned. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child? So she shows up with his ring and his bracelet and his staff.
He's sitting there right now going, ooh.
I can see him sitting at the end of that hallway and all of his people on both sides. And she comes walking up the hall with two men behind her, one holding each arm. And she's holding this stuff. And
he's,
oh boy. I found my ring.
It's a bit of a pickle here.
I pray thee, whose are these? The signet ring, the bracelets, and staff. And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I. Judah could go out there, but Judah could always be brought back to where he knew he was supposed to be. And he went out there this time, and just the sight of those items, and knowing everything that he knew, that he purposely withheld his third son because he thought she was cursed and he would die also. He purposely withheld the son to do the thing that should have been done. Because that I gave her not the Shelah, my son, and he knew her again no more. It came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. It came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, thus came out first. So, interesting, very seldom happens, but you got two babies in the womb. Hand comes out first, and being the firstborn of a woman was very important. So, whatever part came out first, they marked it. Tied a thread around the hand. Hand went back in. And it came to pass, as he drew back his hand, that behold, his brother came out, and she said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Therefore his name was called Perez. And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah. Chapter 39, Book of Genesis, exhaustive view, exhaustive understanding of the Book of Genesis. But David and Jonathan here are between the lines, understanding the Bible. Amazing, beautiful manuscript, full of life, a living, living word. The more you consume, the more you'll be fed. But you can't just look at it once. You got to look at it hundreds and hundreds of times. And the more you look, the more you'll get. So chapter 39, verse 1, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was prosperous, a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. Amazing, doesn't it? Especially when they're out there on their own. This is twice in Egypt now. A Hebrew has been there, and they just know this man is blessed.
Right.
Same happened with Abraham, and then when he was with Abimelech, it's just a countenance there, and a blessing that these outsiders can identify. And if you are a Christian, if an outsider does not identify that to you, in you, then you're not doing something right. And that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. It came to pass, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessings of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. So this guy's getting wealthier and wealthier, and he knows it's because of Joseph. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat, and Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. He put everything, the man put everything that he owned in Joseph's hand.
Makes me think back this is kind of like the reverse of what Jacob went through, because the fellow recognized that he had the glory on him
for
God to make these things manifest. But anyhow, but he kind of, he was kind of divisive with Jacob.
Yeah.
This guy's like, he sees it, he's like, oh.
Yeah, he wanted to exploit it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Talking about Laban.
Yeah.
And Laban wanted to exploit it. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to get rich off this guy.
Right. And this fellow's just like, no, let me lavish this stuff on him.
Yeah. If Laban could have put a leash on Jacob and staked him to the field, he'd still be there today.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotted not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? She says, lie with me. She thinks he's gorgeous. And the Hebrew women are beautiful. The Hebrew men are very handsome too. He says, lie with me every day.
Right.
And he says, no, absolutely not. He says, the man I work for, your husband, given me full control of this house. There's nothing in this house that I cannot put my hand on except you.
Right.
And I will not do this evil thing. It came to pass, if you go to the book of Jasher and Jubilees 2, it fills in the lines here. This woman thought he was gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
It's all she could do not to put her hands on him every time she was around him.
Relentlessly.
She even brought her lady friends over and threw tea parties just so they could all watch him doing his daily chores.
Yep.
I mean, please go there and read these books, and it will fill in. This here is giving you an overview. If you go there, you get the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by the garment, saying, lie with me now. I want you so bad.
Yep.
And he wiggled out of his shirt, and he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Now this, I can see this. She grabs him. He starts twisting and wiggling away from her. She ends up holding his shirt. And he's running away, and she's putting it to her nose, smelling it.
Yeah.
You know, I can see this.
That was a character that I'd read about with her.
And she is really mad now. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garments in her hand and was fled forth, and she called unto the men of the house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me. And I cried with a loud voice, and it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got out. He came in here and he tried to rape me.
Mm-hmm.
And I screamed, oh my gosh, he almost did it. This bad Hebrew. So this woman says, if I can't have him, I will destroy him.
That's it.
How many times does that happen in real life? And this is the realest of life that you can get.
Yes, sir.
What do they say? Something of a woman. It's very dangerous. I forget the guy. Oh, man. Well, neither here nor there. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him, when Potiphar got home, she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant, which thou hast brought unto us. That brings me right back to the Garden of Eden. This woman, gave me, Lord, has caused this. Well, this Hebrew servant, which you brought into this house, came in unto me to mock me. Came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled. He tried to have his way with me, Potiphar, this horrible creature that you hired. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. Okay, so Potiphar knows Joseph now for a couple years.
Yes.
He knows his character. He knows the goodness of him. It said he's a good, goodly person, and Potiphar trusted him in everything.
Right.
And that's instantly gone away because of this woman's words. She is his wife, so he chose to believe her. And Joseph's master took him, put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there. He was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So, no matter where you are in life, God can bless you regardless of the station that you're in. So Joseph's in the prison for a few days, and all of a sudden, he's like running the place.
Yeah.
He's like keeping the other prisoners locked up.
Hey, you ever thought about becoming a CEO there, Joe?
Yeah, there he is, bringing them their food and all. I mean, he's got the key to the food cabinet.
Need somebody to run the canteen.
And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper.
So the prison guard, or the prison, the overseer, recognized it in him too.
Yeah, he recognized his countenance and his blessings of God, and the fact that if he's here, I can be fishing somewhere.
That's right.
Yeah, buddy.
Yes.
That's all for this week's episode of Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible. We hope you've enjoyed this journey through the scriptures with David and Jonathan. Join us next time for more enlightening discussions and exploration of the Bible's deeper meanings here on WVFF 97.7 FM, the Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.